Sherlock Holmes to unravel another baffling mystery.
Easy, Artemis. Easy now, girl. You don't want to set the others off, do you? Of course you don't. Look, something from Yarkum. Good, an OT. I'll open it easy now. Just to show what a kind and loving fellow I am, and how lucky you are to have me for...
Dear God, what... Oh! Help! Help! Stop! Somebody help! Stop!
Unopened casebook of Sherlock Holmes, Six Extraordinary Adventures, written by John Taylor, with Simon Callow as Sherlock Holmes and Nicky Henson as Dr. John Watson. The fourth adventure, The Phantom Organ.
Windwhistle in Devon was a village I knew fairly well. Before my first wife, Mary, died, we sometimes visited her cousin Cordelia in the rectory there, Cordelia being married to the local vicar, the Reverend James Partridge. But I'd not heard from them for years. One evening, at our Baker Street lodgings, Holmes and I received a telegraph message pleading with us to come to Windwhistle as quickly as we could. The message, however, was not from Cordelia Partridge, but from Lord Alistair Hembury, High Court Judge and Master of Windwhistle Hall. And it was this curiosity that whetted Holmes's appetite. We were on the first train to Exeter next morning, and before dark, we were at the hall itself and being ushered by Lord Alistair into the family vault.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, my brother, what's left of him.
Good Lord.
Yes, bit of a mess. Found in the stables. Horses seem to have stampeded while he was feeding on biscuits.
Did the local doctor give a cause of death, Lord Alistair?
Beeston, yes. Reckons a snapped rib pierced his heart. But if that's all there was to it, I wouldn't have sent for you.
Oh?
Mr. Holmes, there's been a smouldering resentment against our family in this village for decades. We run things tightly here.
You run the village?
It doesn't always make us popular. My brother was quite certainly murdered in an act of naked revenge. Here's your evidence. Some villain nailed it to the church notice board 3 days ago.
Now is the hunter hunted. H.H. shall be first.
But the night my brother died, something even more astonishing happened at Windwhistle. The church was quite empty. Yet local folks swear they distinctly heard the organ being played. Some popular song. Now is the hunter hunted. That means us, you see, the Hembrys. Hunters for generations. Then, H.H. shall be first. That was you. Anyway, I expect you'd like a closer look at the body. You'll find me in the upstairs parlor when you've finished. Then you can give me your conclusions.
Conclusions? A little early for those, I think. But one thing is clear, Watson. The Hembrys are a dying breed. Now that this one is gone, Lord Alistair and his venerable mother are the last two left. Now, this body here. Is there anything that your medical knowledge would tell you to be out of the ordinary?
Frankly, Holmes, no. The fellow has a ghastly stare in his eyes, but the horror of being trapped in a stable full of rampaging horses would account for that. Notwithstanding Lord Alistair's suspicions, I'd hazard this to be a genuine accident.
Oh, well, perhaps it is. But when you've finished your examination, we'd better investigate this business of the phantom organ. And who better to talk to about it than your cousin-in-law and her husband, the vicar? Perhaps they'd welcome a visit. Well, it is most kind of you to put us up, Mrs. Partridge.
Not at all. I'm only sorry it is such a small cottage.
I hope it won't be too irksome for you and John sharing that tiny room, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, Watson and I are used to one another's ways, Mr. Partridge. I'm up all night smoking, and in direct retaliation, he snores titanically.
Really, Holmes?
Seriously, Mrs. Partridge, we shall be very comfortable.
Frankly, we shall be glad of your company. I suppose you know about the strange business of the organ.
Indeed, Lord Alistair mentioned it.
It disturbed us both terribly.
But James is being kind. It was I who was disturbed. Terrified might be a more accurate word.
From our window here, as you see, the church door is in full view. It's the only way in, and I'm quite certain the building was empty. But a light shone in that tower as bright as the new moon, and we heard the organ playing for a good half minute some profane, infernal tune.
Most intriguing.
But it's not just the organ. There was that awful warning nailed to our notice board, and Hugh Hembury's subsequent death in the stables. The Hembury family has trodden upon people for too long. Now the evil they have done is coming back to them.
You make it sound as if you believe some supernatural power is at work, Mrs. Partridge.
I don't know, Mr. Holmes. But there is little love in this village for the Hembrys. They have their way in all things. During the last 2 years, it has become intolerable. Even a vicar's wife is not exempt. Each evening, I am summoned to Windwhistle Hall to listen to Lady Hembry's complaints and criticisms and to attend her every whim.
You are compelled to do this?
But if I do not, I cannot be sure that some poor soul will not be evicted from a cottage or some struggling farmer deprived of his living. The death of Hugh Hembry will not be widely mourned. It may even bring some relief. Ah, that will be old Jennifer. Excuse me, gentlemen. Jennifer, good evening.
Oh, you've guessed, Mrs. Partridge.
Come on in and meet them.
Oh, well,
Mr. Holmes.
Sir.
John, this is Jennifer Farway, an old friend.
Mrs. Farway.
She has had the misfortune to lose both her husband and her son in the last few years, and now makes a living baking these rather delicious sweetmeats.
Good evening, gentlemen. Reverend Partridge.
Jennifer's husband, Joshua, was a fine craftsman. Built our organ here.
Hey, pity he were never paid for it. Oh, but I doubt you gentlemen have time to waste listening to an old woman's moans and groans.
On the contrary, Mrs. Farway, I should very, very much like to hear your story.
Would you, sir?
I would, really.
Sit down, Jennifer.
Oh, right.
Tell Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson all about it.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Partridge. Well, it were her up at the house, Lady Hembry, who asked Joshua to build that organ. Her gift to Windwhistle Parish, she said. As you may imagine, gentlemen, we were never wealthy. Yet not a halfpenny did she put up in advance. Joshua and I borrowed and scrimped and starved ourselves to pay for the materials to build that organ. And when it was finished and everyone had praised it for a fine piece of work, she laid down just half what money she'd promised us. It nearly did for us, I can tell you. But what are poor folk to do against the likes of them? Still, if it was only the money I could let it go, it's the rest I cannot forget. Now, have you a few pots for me today, my dear?
Oh, yes. We keep bees now, John.
Ah.
In fact, our Windwhistle honey is praised far and wide. Jennifer here makes her cakes with it.
Thank you, my dear. And now I'll be on my way. A pleasure to meet you, gentlemen.
Oh, I hear that. Hi, Jennifer.
Good night, Jennifer.
She's a sad character, our Jennifer Farway.
I wonder what she meant when she said, if it were only the money, I could let it go.
Well, you ought to know it all, Mr. Holmes, I suppose. After the business with the payment for the organ, her husband Joshua began to slander the Hembrys in public. They got so angry they made sure no one would give him work as a carpenter. And the long and the short of it is, Joshua took to drinking, and one night he was found in a ditch, dead from exposure. That is what the Hembrys owe Jennifer Farway, the life of her husband.
Poor soul.
Yes. Poor Jennifer. And now, you must forgive me if I leave you. My evening appointment with the irascible Lady Hembry will not wait. I shall see you later, gentlemen.
Indeed.
Truth is, we're all slaves to Lady Hembry's whims.
No one did explain what happened to Mrs. Farway's son, except to say that he died.
Yes, there was something. You know by now that the Hembrys are great ones for hunting. Well, Jordan, the Farway's boy, rode once or twice with a hunt.
A carpenter's son.
It was a privilege the Hembrys liked to extend to certain of us commoners from time to time. Unfortunately, Jordan Farway fell from his horse at Itley Brook and was killed. It's understandable that Jennifer blamed the Hembrys, but I'm sure in this case it was nothing other than an accident.
Mr. Partridge, did you hear that?
Yes. That is it, Mr. Holmes. The same music. And look, a light in the organ loft. But we've been sitting at this window all evening. No one could possibly have entered the church.
No, they could not. Indeed, no. Mr. Partridge, be so good as to give us the keys to the church. And wait here, if you will, while Watson and I investigate. Nothing. The organ loft is empty and no light.
And the organ locked, even the dust undisturbed.
You got the key to the organ on that bunch.
I don't know. Perhaps this one. No. Wait. Yes, here.
Good. At the risk of further distressing the Reverend Partridge, I wish to try a note or two. Pray work the bellows for me, Watson.
Oh, very well.
What do you think? Does it sound the same as before?
I think not. Less haunting, perhaps.
Yes, yes. Supernatural fingers clearly play a different kind of music.
And it is odd that there's not so much as the smell of a snuffed candle. No smoke, nothing.
It's extraordinary business, all right. And so far, I confess, it has me quite baffled.
Watson! Mr. Holmes!
What is it? Mr. Partridge?
Come down at once. I found another message on the church notice board. A.H. shall be next, it says. That means Lord Alistair.
After that, the Reverend Partridge went directly to Hembury Hall, partly to warn Lord Alistair about the message, and partly to collect Cordelia, for he feared lest an attempt on his lordship's life might also endanger his own wife. When Partridge and Cordelia returned from the hall, however, they were much excited.
There is pandemonium at the hall, Watson. They are in terror of their lives. Lord Alistair is talking about going away entirely.
And Lady Hembury is begging and pleading with him and saying no true son could desert her under such dreadful circumstances. They're pacing this way and that like beasts in a cage.
An epidemic of fear has descended on that house, gentlemen. In the end, it was decided that Lord Alistair will depart for his rooms at Bristol Assize Court first thing tomorrow and remain there until at least the end of the month. Forgive us if we do not seem to be mourning his departure much.
Well, it's too dark for any more investigations, but it's never too late for thinking. Would you forgive Watson and myself if we retired?
Of course. And tomorrow, you must see our garden.
Garden?
It is over there, attached to the churchyard. I think you'll like it.
Until tomorrow, then. Good night.
Good night.
It's all very elusive, Watson. Not least the business of Hugh Hembury's death. You're quite certain he died from crushing?
As sure as I ever have been about any post-mortem diagnosis, my dear fellow.
Yet how could a murderer plan a death by stampede? Too much is left to chance. A horse may or may not stampede even when provoked, or it might go the wrong way and do no damage. As for the business of the phantom organ, it has got me quite beaten. No more than 5 seconds elapsed between the moment that music ceased and the moment we entered the church. Yet I'm certain no one had been there for some time.
We have two mysteries, then. The mystery of how Hugh Hembury was disposed of, and the mystery of the phantom organ.
Well, yes, if Hugh Hembury was murdered. And if his death was an accident, we have the mystery of how the phantom organist could have predicted it, unless he is a phantom, of course, in which case perhaps anything is possible.
You don't believe that to be the case, of course.
It would be a rare phantom that composed for the church notice board in yellow pencil, but I must confess, Watson, that at the moment I do not have a better theory.
Well, Watson, Mr. Holmes, a fine morning. Did you have a good walk?
Excellent, thank you. So, Mrs. Partridge, this is your garden.
As far as the hedge, beyond that is the churchyard. We grow as much as we can, and then, of course, there are the bees. You are at the wellspring of Wind Whistle Honey.
A privilege indeed, and under the yew. What is that against the church wall?
Ah, there's an old Romany caravan. It's been there for years. I believe my predecessor once took in some travelling people who subsequently abandoned their life on the road for good. I can tell you there have been times when I've dreamed of painting it up and disappearing from Wind Whistle forever. Perhaps all the way back to South America.
Mr. and Mrs. Partridge were missionaries there once.
Ah.
However, since at present Cordelia is using the caravan as a bee house to cultivate a rather delicate specimen, it is unsuitable for habitation.
Come, James, we must leave them to explore the garden. And then we shall all have some lunch.
Till later, then.
Yes. Okay, we're fine. A thought occurs to me.
Watson.
Do you think it possible that someone might be using that caravan and somehow sneaking into the church to play the organ?
But even if it was so, it would not help us with the problem. I've examined the church thoroughly, and there's no way in except through the door that faces the vicarage cottage. Mm. How then does our phantom get into the church and out of it again and leave no trace of his having been there at all? Hmm? But this is interesting. I found it here by the foot of the tower.
A piece of paper?
Not paper, Watson. Feel it. It's very, very fine fabric.
But burnt. Charred along the edge here. Might have lain hereabouts for years.
I think not. No signs of weathering.
You have a theory, then?
Nothing quite so concrete as a theory, Doctor, but I am forming one by degrees.
What's that? Somebody in a hurry?
Gentlemen, do you see the carriage? That's Giles Derriman driving the master of the village off to Exeter. Lord Alistair Hembury is running in fear, his tail between his legs.
Warm day to have the blinds down.
Hiding his shame, John, and rightly so. Well, we shall be without him for a month at least. Let us celebrate the occasion with some luncheon.
Glass of cider, Mr. Holmes, while Cordelia serves up the meal.
Why, thank you. Your hospitality, Mr. and Mrs. Partridge, has been generous in the extreme. But as I was saying to Watson last night, the time has come, I think, for us to... Rembrandt! Rembrandt!
Lord, who's that? A moment! Excuse me, gentlemen. Giles.
Reverend, for mercy's sake, some terrible's come about. It will nothing to do with me, I swear.
Well, where, Giles?
Just half a mile along the lane. It's his lordship, Reverend. I think he's dead.
J-
Giles Derriman led Mr. Partridge, Holmes, and myself along the lane to where the landau had come to a halt. The door was open, and slumped in the gap between the facing seats was Lord Alistair Hembury. Certainly dead, his features fixed in a ghastly expression.
He just suddenly shouted, like in pain. I stopped and ran round, and when I opened the door, he was like this.
He just lit a cigar. Pity he did not have the chance to enjoy it. See, here it is. There's a scorch where it fell against his coat, and here's the cigar box upside down on the floor. Have a look, Doctor. See if you can ascertain the cause of this gentleman's seemingly very sudden demise.
A heart attack or a stroke would seem most likely. Perhaps brought on by fear of that threat last night.
Yet how...
Yes, Mr. Partridge?
Well, I was merely wondering, Mr. Holmes, how the so-called phantom could have known Lord Alistair was about to die of a heart attack, even assuming he was frightened.
That is indeed the problem.
Just a minute.
Watson?
Upon his ankle, do you see? This small swelling, slightly cratered in the middle. There's a puncture mark in the center of it.
A needle, perhaps?
Possibly. Do you think he might have injected himself with some lethal chemical?
I doubt it. And if he had, he would have had to dispose of the syringe, yet there was nothing of the sort on the roadway as we approached. No, that is not it.
I'd better go and tell Lady Hembury, Mr. Holmes, and my wife, and send for the police. Will you wait here?
Indeed we will, Mr. Partridge. It will give us a chance to consider the matter in more detail.
Hope you come up with an answer, sir. Or I dare say Lady Hembury will blame me for not looking after him well enough.
There was nothing you could have done, Mr. Derriman. Whether he died by natural or supernatural causes, it was out of your hands.
Mr. Derriman, I dare say you know this area well.
Ought to, sir. Lived there all my life.
That stream that runs down into the woods ahead, what is it?
They call it James Water now, but the ancient name is Itley Brook.
Itley? Isn't that where Jennifer Farway's son, Jordan, was killed in the hunting accident?
Well, that's what we're supposed to say.
Hmm? What do you mean, Mr. Derriman? Supposed to say?
Sir, I'm sick of all the lies that we must tell in this village to protect ourselves from the Embrys. Jordan Farway never died in no fall. He were hunted down and killed. After old Joshua Farway was found dead of drink in that ditch, his boy Jordan vowed he'd get back every last penny Lady Hembury owed for that organ. One night he went down to the hall to take it. And that's when it happened. The Embrys caught him, got together a hunting party, set him loose in Hartford Wood and ran him to ground without an horse. And then they done it.
What?
An arrow, sir. Full in the heart. Oh, the Embrys like their ancient weapons. Word is, it was Lady Hembury herself led that pack. But nobody who rode out that day will admit to anything. To a fear they be blamed, too.
Excuse me, Mr. Derriman.
Sir.
Holmes, could I have a word with you?
Yes.
I had a sudden thought, Holmes, when he was talking about arrows. You remember our adventure of the Sign of Four?
How could I forget it?
Poisoned darts. Perhaps it was a poisoned dart from a blowpipe that killed Lord Hembury in his carriage.
It would have been an appropriate vengeance, indeed. A dart in exchange for an arrow, but we found no dart in the carriage. And besides, fired from outside, with blinds drawn, how could it have found its target? Especially since the wound is in Lord Hembury's ankle.
You're right, of course. A ridiculous idea.
Well, it's not ridiculous, merely incomplete. But whoever is behind these killings appears to be having a good deal of wicked fun. Each time a threat, a haunting, and a death in quick succession. Clues should be dropping into our laps like plums in autumn, and yet... Well. Let us rest our legs on the bank while we wait for the police.
It was a long afternoon. When the police finally arrived, there was much speculation and questioning. And by the time Holmes and I strolled back along the lane towards the vicarage, it was dark. We were tired and hungry, and the day's investigations seemed to have yielded no solutions whatsoever. Then, as we came round a bend in the road, Holmes stopped suddenly.
What is it, dear fellow?
Shh, listen.
The organ.
And look, that light's in the tower again. Come along.
Holmes, the light. It appears to be floating out of the tower, floating to the ground.
Yes, doesn't it? How utterly stupid of me not to realize before. It was never in the tower, Watson. Look at the shape of it. Do you not see what it is?
I'm afraid
It's a balloon. A balloon. A toy hot air balloon. Did you never make them as a boy? A sheet of light fabric stretched over a framework of sticks. Set a candle on the crosspiece and light it, and the hot air takes it up and up and up, bright as a little moon. No, there never was a light in the church tower on those nights of the so-called phantom. From the cottage, we looked right through the tower windows to the balloon on the other side and assumed the lights to be inside the tower.
So, to stop it floating away...
Tied to the ground with a string. Easy, then, to pull down, dismantle, extinguish while the tower was being searched.
So that burnt piece of fabric that you found...
Perennial problem with candle-driven balloons. A tendency to catch fire.
It stopped. As if he'd seen us coming.
The organist? I think not. His tune always ends in the same place. Would you like to meet him? He's right there, in the old Romany caravan. But go easy. Remember, it's a bee house.
There. Good heavens! An organ! A
obvious now that we see it. On the nights of the hauntings, our phantom had much to do. First to attach the doom threat to the notice board of the church, then to scuttle behind the church here, light the balloon, and float it up to the window, then to set in motion the music. As soon as the organ was started, he would have pulled down the balloon and been on his way.
Having first stopped the organ.
No need for that. Watch. I'll just crank back the play reel. You see? It's contrived to stop itself.
Then that is the haunting explained. But why should anyone go to the bother of creating such an illusion?
That is indeed the remaining question. But listen, somebody's out there. Is that you, Mr. Partridge?
Mr. Holmes? Watson, you heard the organ. What are you doing?
I shall explain later. What is it?
There is another note. You'd better look at it.
M.H. shall be last.
That is Lady Maud Henbury herself. My wife has just returned from the hall. Lady Henbury sent her away as soon as they heard that music. She's very afraid for her life.
Understandably. We shall go to the hall at once, Watson.
Do you think the killer is at the hall now?
That is a question which requires a measured answer. I'm almost sure the killer is there, but I think the murderer is probably not.
What?
Come along, Watson.
Yes, sir.
Fenton, it's Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. You remember we came here at the request of Lord Alistair.
Oh, yes, sir, but Lord Alistair...
is dead. So will her ladyship be if you do not let us in at once.
But she has shut herself away in the armory, sir. The door is locked. She instructed me not to disturb her under any circumstances, on pain of dismissal. She has even taken food supplies in with her, sir.
What food supplies?
Well, some fruit, a box of sweetmeats, some tea.
Show me that armory, Fenton.
Oh, sir,
or
please.
There will be no Lady Henbury to pay your wages.
Sir!
Lady Henbury, Sherlock Holmes, let me in.
Fenton, what is this?
The gentleman says you are in danger, your ladyship.
Ah, I am quite safe here. Evict him at once.
Let me in, madam, or I shall have to force the door.
Away with you, man. You are disturbing my supper.
Right, Watson.
Sir, no need for that. Here's the key.
Thank you.
Keep away from me!
Madam, close that sweet box. Curse it, Watson, the thing is out. Lord, what is it? A bee of sorts, the size of it. Take great care, Watson, if it stings, it will kill.
Get it away! Get it away!
It's attacking her ladyship. Some sort of weapon on the wall. Are you all right, Watson?
So far.
Capital. But I need something fatter than this pike, the shield. Try and provoke it towards me, Watson. No, careful. Close your head. Now then.
Holmes, well done. Fine shot. It's dead.
Indeed it is. Could you bear to put it in that sweet box for me, Watson? It may be needed as evidence.
John, Mr. Holmes, are you all right?
Yes. But it was a close thing, Cordelia. There was a giant bee, and had it not been for...
Mrs. Partridge knows all about the bee, Watson. It was she who put it in the sweet box earlier today.
Why, Mr. Holmes?
It's all right, James. Mr. Holmes is right.
But he's saying that...
My dear, I know precisely what he is saying, that it was I who killed the Henburys. And so I did. But I should like to know how he guessed.
Well, it was Watson's talk about poisoned darts that set me thinking. What sort of dart could have found its target in that moving carriage? Only one with intelligence, and what is a bee, seen from a certain perspective, but an intelligent dart.
Such a deadly one.
You were a little careless, I think, Mrs. Partridge, in leaving one of your bee books in our room at the cottage, especially one describing Vespa venatica, the hunting wasp, a deadly hybrid with a venom almost instantaneously fatal to human beings. Of course, even a large insect is compact enough to be delivered in a box of sweets. Or, in Lord Alistair's instance, a box of cigars.
But what of Hugh Henbury? We found no sting on him.
No, the wasp that was sent to kill him did not do its job. No guarantee that it would. But fortunately for Mrs. Partridge's plan, it did drive the horses wild. And they killed Hugh Henbury for her. And this one? Well, I wonder if it would have finished off Lady Henbury. I'm inclined to think it might. It seemed most determined.
Why, Cordelia? You've killed two people and would have killed a third.
Oh, John, if you knew all the evil this woman and her family have worked in the village. If you knew...
About Jordan Farway being hunted to death?
And the blackmail that followed it. I was in that hunting party and other decent men of the community. We were utterly in their grip. My wife, I think, did this for me.
and others like me.
It was certainly ingenious, setting up the air balloon and the music on your way to the meetings with Lady Hembury.
What was the point of all that?
I wanted them to suffer what Jordan Farway suffered when he heard that hunting horn. The fear of death coming and no way to prevent it. And I am satisfied that they did. Now you had better arrest me.
You might have escaped tonight, Mrs. Partridge. Instead, you came here to the hall because you feared that Watson and I might be in danger. I suggest, Mr. Partridge, that you and your wife go directly to the house and prepare yourself for a journey. For a long journey. Somewhere far away.
Mr. Holmes, are you suggesting...
Watson and I must find an inn for the night. And if by, let us say, noon tomorrow, you have not left your cottage for some remote destination, well, we shall assume you would prefer to accompany us back to London.
But, Mr. Holmes, I mean, there's the question...
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. And thank you, John. Come along, James.
Her ladyship awakes.
What's happening here? Where are they going?
A long way off, where the evil in this village cannot touch them.
Oh, she'd better be here tomorrow as usual, or there'll be hell to pay. I am the lady of the manor. I am a Hembury. Do you hear me, sir?
Good night, Lady Hembury.
I am the Hembury. I am Lady Felicity Maud Hembury. Do you hear me, the lady?
The next morning, the vicarage was empty, and we never saw either of the Partridges again, nor ever heard a word of their whereabouts. Yet, along, I think, with all the villagers of Windwhistle, when I reflect that Hembury Hall, since her ladyship's recent death, is now empty of tyrants, I offer up a quiet prayer of mercy for Cordelia Partridge, wherever she might be.
In The Phantom Organ, you heard Simon Callow as Sherlock Holmes and Nicky Henson as Dr. Watson. With John Bull as Hugh Hembury, Jo Manning Wilson as Lady Maud, John Church as Lord Alistair Hembury, Jonathan Adams as the Reverend Partridge, and Kate Binchy as Cordelia Partridge. Other parts are played by members of the cast. The unopened casebook of Sherlock Holmes is written by John Taylor and directed by Peter Hutchins.